right, let's get going. We have a very exciting hour, as we always try to bring you, of information. Exciting in the sense that a lot of you say, and you write in, I didn't know that. These are important things to know, things that the government, the alleged government, this vile cabal of criminals and perverts and et cetera, will not tell you. They don't care about you. And I think many of you understand that. Even those of you who live in foreign countries, you know in many cases your government doesn't care about you. Now, that said, I should reverse that and say that there are many countries, represented by some of you listening, where the government really does care about the people, much more so than this one. This is a joke, a bad joke. Okay, Erica and I are with you three times a week to do our best to help you understand this, and it is a constantly changing and evolving thing, or maybe I should say devolving, but we're finding out more all the time. And what we have been doing here is what I call citizen science. We're doing our own science, and thank goodness for Erica, who has done extraordinary research on so many things. She's buried in papers, reading and understanding the truth, not hearsay, gossip, or just green screen ego tripping. The reality of the situation as it is, you're going to hear it here, probably first. And it's kind of gratifying to see our work pop up elsewhere, because we know we're getting the word out there. Are you there, young lady?
I'm here, Jeff.
You sound familiar. I've heard that voice before.
Deja
and
vu.
We had, yeah, deja vu. Deja vu all over again. Remember that line?
Something like that.
Yeah. Deja vu, that was Yogi Berra said that. Deja vu all over again. All right. There was a story this week about an airline pilot. I had an exemplary career, has a daughter who wants to be a pilot, had everything going for him. He had just landed his American Airlines flight. I've forgotten which airport, but 6 minutes, I believe it was, after he landed. But tell him what happened. America.
Yeah, I believe it was Dallas, Texas. They I guess pulled up to the gate, or maybe they were still taxiing to the gate, but he passed out. He had a heart attack. And
gone.
He coded, meaning, you know, yeah. He passed out. I guess he needed to be
three shocks,
up three
I think.
Times. Shocked,
yep.
Three times, yeah. And he's currently in the ICU of a hospital.
He died, dear friends. He died.
He died?
Right in his captain's seat. And,
wait a second. I didn't hear that.
Well, if he had to be shocked three times, I'd call that...
Okay, yeah, code, okay.
He
okay.
Coded out. If they hadn't shocked him, he'd be dead. I mean, still died. I think he died. But that's a judgment call, I guess, to a degree. But he did code, and that's not good. He just was gone, out. Now, there's a video. I'm going to play this. It's short. It's a statement made by Captain Bob Snow, the airline pilot who had the heart attack on the flight deck. He speaks out about what happened to him and the simple fact that American Airlines forced this man to take the bioweapon injection, like so many Americans have been forced to under mandate. So here's the clip. Captain Bob Snow.
My name is Bob Snow. I'm been a captain for a number of years. My total service with the company is over 31 years. On November 7th, I was mandated to receive a vaccine. Quite literally, I was told if I did not receive the vaccination, I would be fired. This was from our director of flight. So, under duress, I received the vaccine. Now, just a few days ago, after landing in Dallas, 6 minutes after we landed, I passed out. I coded. I required three shocks. I needed to be intubated. I'm now in the ICU in Dallas. This is what the vaccine has done for me. I will probably never fly again, based upon the criteria that the FAA establishes for pilots. I was hoping to teach my daughter to fly. She she wants to be a pilot, that will probably never happen. All courtesy of vaccine. This is unacceptable, and I'm one of the victims. You can see that this is the actual result of the vaccine for some of us. Mandatory, no questions asked, get the shot or you're fired. This is not the American way.
No, it's not the American way, and we are seeing less of the American way every damn day now. I think of the millions of Americans, and I'll stand on that. I don't expect Erica to, but I think we're pretty close on it. Millions of Americans at this point have been murdered by the bioweapon. There's no other way I'll phrase it. They've been murdered. They're hiding the numbers now easier than ever because AIDS is setting in. And so many of the vaxxed have no immune system or very little immune system. And remember the German study. Everybody that had two shots that they checked had only 12.3% of their immune system left after 30 days. That's it. It's over. And this gentleman survived through the grace of God or whomever you want to look to. He should be dead. How many people in Europe have dropped dead on the playing fields of soccer teams? Over 500. 800 have collapsed. 500 dead. But no, what the hell are people doing about it? Why aren't they out on the streets? No one seems to be doing anything except, oh, gee, more people died. What is this thing in their head that it's not going to happen to me? Well, if they got the shot, they really shouldn't be thinking like that. And even if they haven't gotten the shots, they should be thinking like that. It could happen to them because of shedding. And we know from the work that Eric has dug up and we presented that Pfizer knew damned well that shedding was an issue.
No question. And the adenovirus and, and the J&J and the AstraZeneca, Sputnik. These things shed.
Novavax? We think it will.
It's not a live virus. It's not a gene transfection technology. It's just spike protein with an adjuvant. So the... probably not shedding, but it's doing damage. It's doing damage in the people who receive it. There's plenty of evidence it's not staying at the injection site.
Well, okay, that's line number one again. Don't worry about Novavax. It's staying right there at the injection site. There's just a little tiny bit of it. No, there's not a little tiny bit of it when you do the math. And understand that there are, how many spike proteins approximately would you guess would be in the average Novavax? And I don't want to get off the track here, but how many?
About 3.7 trillion.
Trillion.
And yeah, trillion. Yeah.
Why couldn't that protein get in the saliva of somebody, for example, through the blood? Because 50% of the people walking and talking have blood or blood products or blood plasma in their saliva at all times because of poor gum health. Now, that's a potential, in my view, transmission vector right there. Blood is blood.
Well, I don't think they've done the biodistribution studies on this. All they did is show that it creates an immune response. You would generate some antibodies. Whether those antibodies are protective or not, that's unknown. Doesn't appear to be. The vaccine itself is modeled on the original Wuhan strain, and we've had multiple dominant strains since then, variants. None of the vaccines seem to be particularly protective against Omicron, but, you know, that's if you buy into this variant story.
And so don't forget, subvariants. That's the latest one. Now there are subvariants out there. Anyhow, informed consent of people who have gotten the shot, those who have had a choice, doesn't exist in virtually every case I've ever heard of. I don't think it exists at all. This poor pilot and how many others who have been forced, intimidated, threatened, browbeaten into taking the shot, and how many who are not under a mandate have taken the shot through peer pressure, constant publicity, feelings of fear, stress. Oh my, I better get it. Or this is all crazy. This is not how this country was put together. These aren't the principles upon which it was built. We've lost it, friends. And what really bothers me is people are watching now the numbers of the dead pile up, the numbers of the injured pile up, but they're not doing anything about it. What are they doing?
I came across a post today. This was posted by Dr. Christiane Northrup. And this is regarding informed consent. I mean, most of the people that have received this injection are under some belief that this is FDA approved, that it's gone through rigorous trials and vetting, and it's safe and effective.
You're right.
We know it's not the case. So she posted today, or maybe it was yesterday, is there anyone who can testify in this way at Dr. Paul Gosselin's next hearing? Quote, we are looking for a witness who can testify about the lack of rigor in the vaccination process, preferably from a Walgreens, Rite Aid, or other non-medical office environment, to testify that the vaccinator did not call the recipient's PCP, did not review the recipient's medical records, did not obtain recipient's medical history, did not attempt to verify info provided by the recipient, did not obtain an understanding of the recipient's reasons for being vaccinated. So there's some evidence here that this may be pursued in court. Somebody replied to that. These shots were being offered at the Dallas-Fort Worth airport last September. Apparently, there was a market for travelers rushing to their gate to stop and get a COVID shot. I don't know what would have been communicated to the recipient or who was giving these shots, but it seemed very odd and out of place. Mm-hmm. And I'd be surprised if any appropriate protocol were followed. I mean, you know, this thing has been casualized. I mean, the administration of a potentially, you know, toxic vaccine, that's toxic injection, that's certainly not appropriate for a lot of people. And yet it's being given out like candy.
Well, I think the big story is just beginning to appear to those who are looking for it, and that's the story of AIDS. And AIDS will give the vaccine bioweapon producers the plausible deniability. Well, it wasn't our shot. Person died of cancer. Well, he died of CJD. She, never mind her brain was full of prion holes or amyloid plaques. They have all the answers now, because when you have no immune system, you're toast. And people are getting diseases that, as we heard Dr. Blalock say, in some cases, they don't even have a story.
There's people I know that were vaxxed throughout last year and got a booster in the fall, and they did okay, but they are having symptoms that just seem odd. Many of them have gastrointestinal issues. I think I mentioned last week that one went checked herself into a hospital to find out why she was having these problems, and there's no answers. Another one is having strange knee pain, particularly at night. Doesn't know why, but she's been vaxxed and boosted. So I think people are developing issues, but they're not correlating it to having had the injection.
No, there's denial, and they don't.
And it's far enough out
that
there is plausible deniability.
Yes, of course. But if their immune system functionality and integrity were to be, I think, checked, as in Germany, I think the results would be staggering and shocking.
Yeah, there were people, various doctors, medical practitioners, posting things of that nature last year, you know, maybe June, July. They would just...
But no tests? Who's
getting
tested?
They were testing some of their patients, and their T-cell counts, which is, you know, that's a critical arm of your immune system, that they were in the tank.
There you go. Yep. So that's what AIDS is. Now, they've backed off on the trying to blame it on HIV causing the AIDS, because the HIV didn't. They're really doing a lot of two-stepping now. I didn't want to mention the venom in the tap water thing. Unfortunately and tragically, all I'll say is a lot of Americans haven't let go of that image. That hit them. It tricked them.
Yeah.
So their operation was a success. All right. Do you know what I just... I've got a picture here. Let me go back on my homepage. I didn't see this. It's a picture of Fauci and Gates. Nah, it's not Fauci and Gates. Gates doesn't have tattoos on his arm. I think they just transplanted the head, so they photoshopped him. Or did they? I don't know. What if Gates' right arm is tattooed, his forearm? It can't be. He's got too much class for that. All right. Now, we have a friend coming back tonight, a special guest. Her name for this program is Nurse Anne. She is a highly credentialed professional nurse, over 30 years experience, working in major New York hospitals. She's a traveling nurse of sorts and has been watching all of this for some time. She has a story to tell, which I think all of you are going to be pretty interested in. Are you there, Anne?
I am. Good. How are you?
We're good.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, Erica. It's nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thank you.
So, my friend, I don't know how much of this you want to get into, if much at all. It's your call entirely, but we have a lot to talk about with respect to what's happening and how they're acting and interacting with the poor sheep who just don't seem to get it. I understand why they're not being told it, except on a few programs and platforms like this one. Anyway, Anne, what do you want to talk about first? It's up to you.
I could start by saying I was working in the hospital as a travel nurse for a number of months. I was in my second contract with that hospital at the time. And
the last time you were on.
Last time I was on, yeah. I had just started into the second contract. And because there's such a nursing shortage all nationwide, where they're asking contracting nurses to do like 48 hours a week, 60 hours a week. So they're locking you into these contracts, which are exceptionally long hours when you're doing 12-hour shifts. And many times I wasn't actually getting out in 12 hours. I was getting out in 13 and 14 hours and then traveling anywhere from an hour and 20 minutes home. So my day was very long. I should say my night, because I worked as a night shift nurse. Right. And so I was working exceptionally long hours, and I was working in multiple ICU units. And I had been working with patients who had basically, the patients we were seeing were already, I would say, 95 to 97% of patients were vaccinated, and maybe even higher than that now, actually. And I was just a constant exposure to multiple illnesses and COVID. There was a designated COVID ICU unit. And ultimately, I got run down. I got run down to the point where I myself ended up becoming a patient in another area hospital in New York.
Talk about irony. I mean, you were face to face with all manner of health crises and problems, sick, vaxxed people, 97% vaxxed, and it sounds like you got something either from somebody or from the work environment. Go ahead.
I was the only thing that I remember distinctively that stood out the most was the profound fatigue I had. It just consumed me, and we're to the point I couldn't really function much. I mean, all I wanted to do was sleep. And then I started not wanting to eat. And then I started having problems with if I ate or I drank, I was spending a lot of time in the bathroom, and then my gut just got tore up to the point where I started losing weight. And in the course of a week and a half, I had already lost 7 pounds of weight. And the only reason I know this is because I was monitoring my weight continually. So this is how I know.
When did was there a certain point when the alarm bells went off and you said, this is out of control now, I need some help, knowing what you know about hospitals and how treacherously dangerous they can be and are often? What point happened?
Yeah.
Where did you get to the jump off spot where I need help, I'm too sick? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. Well, I was very sick and at the end of December, going into January. And then the fatigue was continuous for all that time period. But then the week before I finally went into the hospital, I called out of work for the whole entire week. I just could not get off. I couldn't get out of bed. And then 2 nights before I went into the hospital, I spiked a fever of 101.3, and I knew I was sick then. I knew I was sick, but I just still couldn't figure out what it was. I just couldn't, and I was saying this is not right, but the fever triggered that something was wrong, and then I still didn't go to the hospital then because I treated it with Tylenol. And I was trying to get in my electrolytes because I knew at this point I wasn't eating, and then I also wasn't drinking enough, so I was trying to get in electrolytes like Gatorade in so I could at least keep that in check, my potassium levels and my magnesium levels. I was very worried about that. So when I spiked the fever the day after, I went and called the physician's office, and they did some labs on me, and then I was at home waiting on the lab work, and I was just laying on the couch, and then finally, the next morning, because I hadn't heard anything, but the next morning I heard, I got up and I was downstairs, and I went to the bathroom, and then I came out, and I was just chilled to the bone. I couldn't get warm. My whole body, my blood went cold. And I just literally, I know what people mean when they say it, but I could not get warm no matter what I did. And I was extremely weak. I couldn't make it back up the stairs. So I laid on the couch, and I was going through this horrific ordeal where I was fading. I could feel myself fading. And
wait a minute, fading like you were...
Yeah,
maybe
I'm
on the way out.
I'm checking out. Like I was like breathing heavy. I was short of breath.
Yeah.
I was chilled to the bone, and then I said to myself, "Oh my God, I'm septic. I've gone septic, and it's the cold phase of sepsis." I was like, "Oh my gosh!" And at that point, I was like, "I got to go to the hospital." And I remember, I was in my pajamas, and I had to just, like, really just, it was a struggle. It was an absolute struggle to just get from from the living room to the car, and I went to the hospital, and while I was in the hospital, and I'm in the getting registered to go into the emergency room, they are checking my vital signs, and then they put me on the pulse oximetry, and my pulse saturation is 74%, and I was oh my gosh. And like, I just saw my whole entire life flash before me, right there and then. I was like, I knew I was really sick at this point. And then I went in to the emergency room, and it was at that point then they started working me up. I was on a heart monitor, and I was spiking fevers. One day I'd have a low-grade fever, other days I'd have a high fever. My heart rate was always tachycardic. I was always like in the 120s and the 130s, whereas when I was healthy and active and working, my heart rate would be in the 60s and 70s. It was never, ever that high. So my heart was put under a lot of stress because of the infection I had going on in my gut. And I had an infection in my gut. They actually said it was C. difficile, which is very unusual and very rare for somebody young and healthy to get something like this. It's normally something you would see with somebody who's elderly and more immunocompromised.
Yes, so, and a question. Did they try to tell you you had COVID at any point? Was that one of their first screening efforts? Did they do that?
They asked me if I had COVID, or did I think it was COVID, and I emphatically said no. I said it's absolutely not, because their concern was because I was so short of breath and my oxygen saturations were running low.
Sure.
But my lung sounds were clear. But they did know that there was an active infection going on at this point. So,
okay.
And they didn't know what kind.
Right. What amazes me, and Eric, I think you might want to even jump in on this too. I don't know how, and now Anne is as good of a professional nurse, as highly competent as they get, and you're in the hospital year in and year out working around other people. What was it that made you available to this particular infection? Was it just being overworked so terribly that you got run down? Would your normal health immunological function have kept you safe from this? We'll get to the punchline here of what this was shortly. Erica, how do these people work around disease like that and not get sick?
Well, that's a good question, but I don't know that we've ever had this many immune-compromised people, meaning those who have taken the injection, and they're now, you know, their immune systems are not right. A lot of times they're harboring infections, but because parts of their immune system that would create a fever or other symptoms that would alert them,
sure,
to the fact that they're being infected with something, they don't have these symptoms. So they're walking around and shedding viruses, shedding who knows what, bacteria. And now you've got many of these people. Yes, yeah. Pathogen factories. And so you've got a lot of these people in one, you know, area of a hospital. And, you know, a staff that's overworked, you know, a 12-hour day, that's a lot of time on your feet, stepping and fetching. And
not to mention the emotional aspects.
So I think the conditions are rife for that to happen. That's not a surprise.
Okay, and go on. Yeah. Tell us what happened here.
And the thing about the units I was in the months of December into January and February, all of their nurses were getting sick, and they were actually getting sick with different type of infections, but the majority of them were been told that it was COVID. That was problematic since December in the hospital I was in. So people were coming down with illnesses, but the thing about it is the nurses, the majority of the nurses that I know of that worked in that hospital were vaccinated. Certainly all their staff were. And in fact, they were getting harassed to actually have a booster from administration until the governor of New York went on the Friday before and said that the healthcare workers don't need to get the booster at this time, that they were pushing that off. So they didn't get the third booster, but they all got the first two.
Got it. Okay, so what?
I'm working around all these people, and because I was agency, I wasn't required, because the agency didn't require me, because I had presented with a medical and religious exemption, and they accepted that. So the thing. So I was. There's very few nurses I meet now who are not vaccinated, even if they are travelers, but. The thing about it was, is I wasn't. So of course, now I'm as healthy as a horse, but I've certainly felt that way. But constant exposure of working in COVID units, all kinds of respiratory infections, all kinds of GI. A lot of patients were coming in with GI issues. There's a thing going around now, right now. They're calling it a stomach bug, but I'm going to tell you honestly, a stomach bug is one thing, but it's actually this thing that's going around at the moment is taking people to the hospital and then having them stay overnight for 1 to 2 nights in the hospital. So that's not a stomach bug. Stomach bugs don't take people and force them to be hospitalized.
Well, Erica has been working on that angle of this whole nightmare from nearly the beginning, stomach and digestive issues, which were overlooked. And tell us your take on stomach and digestive issues that would really knock somebody out. What might it be, that microbiome?
With this COVID, or the SARS-CoV-2 virus, it's known that it's extremely disruptive on a person's microbiome, meaning the bacteria that colonize their skin, their orifices, and their intestinal tract. And for some reason, this virus, I mean, the flu virus does this too, but the SARS-CoV-2 virus seems to do it in a really disruptive way. And so it's not uncommon for people to have a severe case of bacterial toxemia along with the virus that just, complicates the entire clinical picture. Because it's basically a form of poisoning. The microbiome is disrupted. So what that means is your good bacteria are not present in high enough numbers, and the bad bacteria, the ones that produce toxins, tend to overgrow and basically poison you. And that can lead to sepsis. Rather quickly, if you're struggling with something else at the same time.
So, Anne, let's finish up your ordeal here, then we've got a couple other questions. But how did you finally get diagnosed?
So they did blood cultures and other specimens, and it came back with the confirmation that I had a lot of toxins in my gut from the C. difficile. And they basically had to, because things had gotten so bad, I was already starting to go into acute renal failure. My BUN and creatinine had already been elevated when I went to the hospital. And then they wanted to manage it medically because they felt I was young enough that I would be able to handle it. So they hammered me with antibiotics. So I was getting three different antibiotics to help me with to try and kill this infection. And in the meantime, I had a GI consult come in, and basically he was trying to manage the medical side of things, and then they had me seen by a surgeon, and a surgeon was coming in saying it may become a situation where it can't be managed medically. You're looking at possibly surgery and removing part off your intestine, and you would probably have ileostomy or a colostomy for a number of months. And I was very upset when I heard that. I was extremely upset when I heard that. And I was very defiant that that would not happen. I was like, oh, I was not going to have that happen to me.
Let me ask you a question, Anne. You're mm-hmm. a one hell of a professional. How did you feel being the patient? Did you think you were in good hands? Did you think, did you feel they knew what the hell they were doing? What were your thoughts? This is like a bad movie.
Yeah. I will say I had four physicians consult my case. Three out of the four were phenomenal. They were very, very good, the physicians.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The nurses on the step-down unit, they actually were actually pretty good, but they didn't have a lot of experience. They hadn't been in the field in the critical care field for very long. But the problem was I was helpless because I was too weak most of the time to even like dispute anything. The only thing that I was adamant about is that I wasn't going to allow that surgeon to come near me. That was the only, but the rest of it, I was most of the time when they came in and they hung the antibiotics, I was fast asleep most of the time.
You were, I think it's fair to say, if that isn't critical condition, I don't know what is. I'm not a doctor, but you were extremely ill.
Yeah.
Did you mention that you were having an issue with clotting as well?
Oh, yes. So then the lab work comes back, and this was the best part of all, was the lab work comes back, and I had a D-dimer that came that was extremely elevated, was 3,000 nearly, 2,799. And there was no rhyme or reason for me to have an elevated D-dimer, because the only reasons they were seeing those high D-dimers were people who with COVID, which I didn't have, people that had gotten the vaccine, which I didn't have, and people who had been clotting, which I didn't have, because they did the test. They actually did the test to see if I actually was clotting. So there was no explanation for the high D-dimer.
Huh. That's strange. Now, can that test come back with false readings for any reason you can come up with? Could there be, Erica, could there be proteins that test could read inappropriately somehow?
It's really strange. Let me think.
All right, well, go ahead, Anne, while she's thinking, because the D-dimer is not 100% reliable.
If you include all those other factors in, like you're exposed to COVID, you'd had the vaccine, or if you had a tendency to develop clots and blood clots. And we used to do that all the time before COVID ever came to be. That the D-dimers, we were watching them closely with patients that were having atrial fibrillation, and people that had bleeding tendencies, and we'd watch for people who were on anticoagulation medications and things like that, and people who would be at risk for developing blood clots. So that was a definitive test we would have used for those reasons, you know?
Well, I would contend that you probably had picked up spike protein and it had accumulated in your blood or body to induce that clotting.
Yeah.
You know, the spike protein all by itself, you don't need a whole virus to make that happen. Or, alternatively, some of the toxins that are produced by the bacteria also can promote clotting.
So you could have gotten spiked in addition to coming down with C. difficile. That's what we're kind of postulating here. Do you think that that's... I mean, my God, you were around it all the time.
I was around it. I was around it, and I was having a lot of nights where I was exposed with the nurses and patients. So I've never eliminated that as a possibility. In fact, I feel very strongly that it was actually a possibility that I was actually exposed to the point where I ended up picking up the spike protein. And it really, honestly scared me to death. And when I was in the hospital, I kept pushing them doctors to also check my D-dimer levels and my PT and my PTT. And they would be questioning why I was asking for this. But see, they didn't know what I've just told you. I didn't get the vaccine. So there was no reason for me to have those kind of levels. And the infectious disease doctor, he said that what I thought I was when I was having the GI symptoms of COVID previously, he goes, it was most likely you already had the C. difficile. And so, you know, so that's why I worry, because I was around all of those people that had been vaccinated or was coming in with this, the COVID disease. I was around the ventilators. I mean, you're suctioning people. The ventilators, when they come detach the mucus from the tube, can spray in your face. And gosh almighty, I hate to say this out loud, but there was a couple of times where they disconnect and you get sprayed. You know, if you weren't wearing the face shield, you'd have got sprayed. So, of course, you're getting exposed to it.
Yeah.
You're
so
exposed to it in every manner.
Yeah, we can't dismiss the possibility that you were shed upon. Well, you are being shed upon in that job constantly.
Yeah.
And that may have played a factor in the D-dimer, and maybe some of the other major symptoms too. I don't know about C. difficile. I don't. You're the pro. Anyhow, we don't have but about 7 minutes left, so we kind of want to wrap this up. People want to know how you are now. How are we doing now?
I'm physically doing really well, really well. From the standpoint of going back into my career, working as a nurse in a hospital again, I have a big reluctancy to do it. So
unless you could pick and choose something that would be safer, with your wisdom, you ought to be teaching nurses. Anyway.
I appreciate that.
How did your employer handle this?
Yes. Well, this was the great thing this is what finally happened. Because when I was released from the hospital and they treat you for sepsis because with a massive amount of fluids because you become severely dehydrated, they just weren't checking the blood levels. They should have been checking for the blood levels for how well I could tolerate the fluids. But by the time I was discharged, I came home, and the following day I was now fluid overloaded to the point where I had over 15 liters of fluid on me, and I'd gone into heart failure. So I ended up basically flat out refusing to go back to the hospital. I told the doctor I will die if I go back there. So I said I'll treat it outpatient. And, of course, I had to continue to work with the doctor outpatient. And she wasn't happy about this decision, and she documented that in my chart, by the way. And then she turned, but my employer, she wrote me off work for a month because she knew I couldn't tolerate any kind of activity. I mean, it took me an hour to have a shower in the morning. It took me another half hour to get dressed. It was terrible. I was completely limited as to what I could do. So she took me out of work for a month, and my employer subsequently, the agency I worked for, terminated me. I was taken out of work for so long. So, yes, that's what happened there.
So you're going to be okay. You're okay.
Yes.
You're past the worst of it. This is a real, I just think that if this had happened to someone else without your professional expertise and brilliance, you might not have made it easily. There could have been bad decisions made while you were unable to really sit up and fight for yourself. You didn't have an advocate in there, and you were out of it. So I guess the lesson we want to mention is that if you, and I know when people are diagnosed with, allegedly, with COVID, that their families are not allowed to see them, which is so outrageous. But people in hospitals should have an advocate for them, to make sure they fully understand what they're up against and what their choices are. That seems like it should be a profession in and of itself, but I guess it isn't yet. All right,
And then of course the advocate has to be willing to stand up to the physicians and
that's
the
right.
nurses.
That's right.
So it'll
that's
take right. an exceptionally strong human being to do that.
Agreed. Okay, best advice we can give you is if you're not dying, don't go into a hospital. It's crazy. It's just crazy. We've made that point over and over again. And there are some wonderful people working in the field. We know that. Most of them have been injected. Most of them are shedding. Most of the patients in the hospitals are shedding. Do you really want to be around that? And for goodness sakes, understand that wear your mask whenever you go into a store. That's our recommendation. Wear a mask, even if it's only 10% in your favor. Take that 10%. It will stop aerosolized droplets of moisture, which may well be carrying proteins, viruses, bacteria, anything. So you've got to think. This is Erica. What's your favorite line? This is survival.
Survival of the wisest.
Yeah. And also, the one takeaway I would say, whether you're Christian or not, or whatever it is you want to believe
sure.
in, I will say that in the Bible, and it's the one line that sticks to me the most now, but in the Bible, it does actually say that the life of the flesh is in the blood.
Very true.
And the number one target of the bioweapon injections?
Was the blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sadly, Americans really don't have much of a chance to learn this because the media is controlled, and the media is part of the mechanism of this global agenda to reduce the population. The media is a crucial part of it. It mm-hmm. lies to you all the time. Whenever you're watching it, you're being lied to. So try to break away from it. Try to be intuitive. That's something they don't like. They don't like intuition. Usually, that voice inside you usually won't ever mislead you if you learn to tune in on it. Okay. So, Anne, I'm really glad to hear, along with everyone listening, that you got through something that was a terrible ordeal. And I hope that, we'll have you back on again soon. There are a lot of things going on out there. Less vehicular traffic, less people visible, We think many of them have been vaxxed and are just not feeling good and they just rather stay home. We want to talk to you about that. Anyhow, bless you, and we're very happy for you that you got through this.
Thank you, and stay safe and healthy.
Yeah.
You too,
Erica?
Ann.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Take care.
Okay.
Thank you very
night,
much,
Ann.
Erica.
All right.
Good night now.
Good night, everyone.
Okay, that's our program this evening. So our friend, Nurse Ann, made it. She was very, very, very sick. Take care of yourselves. Remember BioSuperfood. This is not a commercial hype. That product is astounding. So build yourself up in every way you can. And we will be back tomorrow night. See you then.